Good morning and welcome back to the second hour of Focus 580. It's our morning talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. The producers for the show, Harriet Williamson, Martha Deal, and Henry Frain, back with us this morning at the controls. We are hoping that in this part of the show, we will be able to hook up with our scheduled guest. His name is Jean-Charles Brizard. He is a French expert on terrorism and terrorism financing, and we are scheduled to talk with him about a biography that he has written of Abu Musab al-Zarqawi, the man who I think has the distinction of being the most wanted man today in Iraq for his organization of terrorist activity. The book was recently out here now in the United States. It was originally published in France, and he is in Europe. I believe that he's in Britain, and we're trying to hook up with him, and we hope within the next minute or two to do that. And if it turns out that that doesn't work out, well, we'll see if we can shoot for another time. Just let me take the opportunity to mention a couple of upcoming programs here. We'll be talking tomorrow morning in the second hour of our show about depression. Our guest there will be Dr. Peter Kramer. He is an MD doctor. He's clinical professor of psychiatry at Brown University, and we'll be talking about his recent book, Against Depression. Another health-related subject on the show on Thursday at 10 o'clock, our guest Janet Golden. She teaches history at Rutgers University, and there we will be talking about a book that she's written that looks at fetal alcohol syndrome. The title of her book is Message in a Bottle. And then also on Thursday, we'll be talking with some of the people involved in the current production of Rossini's opera Cinderella, now going on at the Sugar Creek Symphony and Song at Watsika. We'll be talking with the stage director and also the president and executive director of the festival there. So that's on Thursday. We are here weekday mornings from 10 until noon. We have 10 different topics for you every week, and we do always welcome your questions and comments. Well, indeed, in this part of Focus 580, we will be talking with Jean-Charles Brizard. He is an international expert on terrorism and the financing of terrorism. Since June of 2002, he has headed the international inquest on behalf of families of those killed on September 11th, 2001, who've lodged a complaint against all of those who either lent material or moral assistance to al-Qaeda. He has testified before the United States Congress, as well as for the President of the United Nations Security Council. He's also testified in a number of criminal proceedings concerning the funding of terrorism. In 2003, October, he testified before the Banking Committee of the U.S. Senate on the progress of the struggle against the networks that provide that financing. He is a regular contributor to the international media, including NBC, ABC, CNN, The New York Times, The Washington Post, The Wall Street Journal, The Guardian, and Le Monde. And he is the author of a book that was first published in France and now has been published here in the United States that looks at the life and career of Abu Musab al-Zarqawi. The book is titled Zarqawi, The New Face of Al-Qaeda, and it is published by The Other Press. He's joining us this morning by telephone, and as we talk, questions from people who are listening are certainly welcome. The only thing we ask of callers is that people just try to be brief. We ask that so that we can keep the program moving and get in as many different people here as possible. Questions, though, are welcome. 333-9455. That's for Champaign Urbana listeners. We do also have a toll-free line. That's good anywhere that you can hear us, and that is 800-222-9455. So at any point here, if you have questions, so you're certainly welcome to call. Mr. Brizard, hello.
Yes.
Thanks for talking with us.
Morning. Yeah,
we appreciate you giving us some of your time, certainly. And I guess it's my understanding that you began to look into the life and the career of Abu Musab al-Zarqawi as a result of this other work that you were doing, investigating al-Qaeda. Is that
right.
Correct?
That's correct, yes.
Let's start out, perhaps we talk a little bit about his history. You tell us about how he, growing up as a young man in Jordan, was not particularly political, not particularly religious. In fact, what he was a petty criminal.
Yes, that's right. He was basically a street fighter. He was suffering from the local situation, very frustrated from the local situation. He was living in a poor area. And indeed, he was basically known for petty crimes, for drug dealings, even for rape. His mother decided to put him in a mosque to make him go back to in the right path, I may say. Unfortunately, it was the wrong mosque at the wrong time, and the imam of the mosque was a radicalized Muslim, and he taught him about jihad, and his only will would become wish will become to join the land of jihad at the time, which was Afghanistan, and to fight alongside Osama bin Laden and others, which he will do. But basically, at the time of his childhood and when he grew up, he was a street fighter.
Yeah, as you mentioned, his mother sent him to this mosque in Amman that was known as a place where people went to prepare to go to Afghanistan, at least to prepare ideologically for that, not militarily, but to prepare ideologically to fight the Soviets there. And he went in 1989. He was only 23 years old. One of the things that I guess I find myself wondering was, to what extent you think that he was driven at this time by ideology, or whether it was simply that he was attracted to the idea of the adventure of going to war?
No, exactly. It was mainly the second idea. He was looking for an adventure, for something that will, pull him out of this little suburb of Amman where he was living. At the time, Afghanistan was an adventure for a lot of people in the Middle East, as Iraq is today for others. But yes, he was mainly looking for a way to go off this situation he experienced in Jordan. Yes.
Do you think that in the process, either the time he spent at that mosque or then going on to Afghanistan, that he became more ideological?
Yes, we know now that he met in Pakistan and in Afghanistan several religious leaders of the Al-Qaeda network, or several mentors for Osama bin Laden and others, including someone named Magdizi, who was a Jordan-born. He taught him again about jihad, about the need to kill Westerners and especially Americans, and all that grew up in his mind, and he fashioned his mind, given these ideas, ideological or religious.
He arrived, actually, at the time that he arrived there in Afghanistan, the war against the Soviets was over.
Yes, exactly.
And that's
right. Another frustration for him. And he had to become a journalist, a simple journalist in Pakistan, following the last weeks of the war and the defeat of the Soviet Union. But he didn't fight at the time. He didn't meet any high-ranking member of the Al-Qaeda network. He simply, spent some time in Afghanistan and came back to his country with all the ideas of the jihadist movement at the time. And back in Jordan, he wanted to overthrow the kingdom, the king, which was, in his mind, too close to the Americans and a betrayer to his religion. So he came back with all this background.
Mm. And after he went back to Jordan, after having been in Afghanistan, he apparently was charismatic enough so that he attracted a number of followers, all people who were intent on being engaged in violent action. What about him do you think that was it that attracted people to him?
Well, it was the time he became charismatic was in prison, and regarding his cellmates. What made him charismatic was his natural authority, because he was using violence. He was the most violent and became the leader, the chief of all these gangs of various jihadists coming back from Afghanistan and trying to overthrow the king, or trying to set up terrorist actions in Israel and elsewhere. He became their chief, the natural chief, because he was the most violent, and everyone was recognizing his authority at the time in prison, where he spent 5 years.
And as you say, when he came back to Jordan, he became, at some point, came to the attention of the government as being someone who was dangerous. He was interested in trying to organize some sort of attack against Israel. He was working against the government of Jordan. So at one point, he was arrested and he was put in jail. And you talked about the fact that here perhaps his abilities as a leader grew, people that were attracted to him for his his extreme commitment to violence. Are there things that you think that he learned when, as a result of that experience, that experience having been in prison for those 5 years in Jordan, that shaped him?
Well, prison is always a context, a difficult context, and he learned how to live in those kind of contexts. He was always fighting against the police at the time and everyone in the prison. So I think he learned most of all how to survive, basically, in a very difficult environment as a prison could be. And it was a very hard prison at the time when he spent 5 years, a high security prison in Jordan, not known for, you know, to respect the human being. So he learned how to survive, how to live in these conditions with his friends.
Perhaps I should introduce again the guest for this part of Focus 580. We're talking with Jean-Charles Brissard. He is an international expert on terrorism and on terrorism financing. He is the co-author of a book that was first published in France and now is being published in the United States about Abu Musab al-Zarqawi. And the title of his book is Zarqawi, The New Face of Al-Qaeda. The Other Press out of New York City is publishing the book. He is also the author of an earlier book, which is titled Bin Laden, The Forbidden Truth. That was, again, originally published in France in 2001 and has been published in a number of languages, including English and Italian and Japanese and five others. Questions are certainly welcome. 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. As you mentioned, after having been in Afghanistan, he came back to Jordan, was arrested, was put in jail. In 1999, the king, King Hussein, died. His son, Abdullah, became the king, and he declared an amnesty. And several thousand prisoners were freed from prison there in Jordan, and one of them was Zarqawi. He then goes back to Pakistan and then goes back to Afghanistan, taking with him a group of Jordanians who were following him. And at that time, apparently, is when he establishes some connections with al-Qaeda. Is that correct?
Yes, that's right. Basically, his reputation as a leader in prison reached Afghanistan. At the time, he was still in prison, and especially in the al-Qaeda network, several Jordanians, including Abu Zubaydah, who was a high-ranking member of al-Qaeda, had already heard about Zarqawi while he was still, again, in prison. When he was freed, he came in Afghanistan and was welcomed by this Abu Zubaydah, another Jordanian, and basically was put in charge of all the Jordanians coming to reach al-Qaeda, and later to all the Kurdish people also trying to reach the terrorist network. And eventually al-Qaeda settled a training camp, a special training camp for him and his followers near Herat at the border with Iran. And that is when he really became an insider of al-Qaeda.
I also get the impression that there were some people in al-Qaeda that didn't completely trust him.
Right, because he spent, you know, 5 years in the Jordan jails, and again, these jails were considered as very hard at the time, and some have believed at the time that he could have been used by the Jordanian intelligence to infiltrate terrorist groups, including al-Qaeda. So there was some fears on him for some time, several months, inside the al-Qaeda network, until they decided finally to give him a training camp and some financial means to expand his network.
To what extent was he an independent operator, and to what extent was he part of al-Qaeda?
Well, I understand that, you know, because simply he was a local chief for al-Qaeda. He was in charge of all the Jordanians, all the Jordan region, all the Syrian region, and later all the Iraqi region. So in that regard, he was independent. He was running his own network of comrades and terrorists, and all the terrorists. And in that regard, yes, he was basically in charge of a specific field inside al-Qaeda. He was not independent, as we sometimes refer to him.
Hmm. He, at this time, he was involved in a number of terrorist operations. He was apparently still intent on some sort of attack against Israel. He was also continued to be active in Jordan. He was apparently responsible for the killing of an American diplomat there.
Yes, exactly. That's the first terrorist act that really succeeded from Zarqawi was the killing of U.S. diplomat Lawrence Foley in Amman. And even at looking at this terrorist at the organization of this terrorist attack, the logistic, he put a lot of material, a lot of training also for the commando that will kill this U.S. diplomat. While it was not, you know, necessary to kill him, but he really wanted to succeed and put all the means available to do that.
He also was involved in planning fortunately an unsuccessful terror attack in Jordan using chemical weapons that was quite ambitious in its scope, and in fact, if it had gone according to plan, it would have been very, very deadly indeed.
Right, that's the most recent plot. I mean, against Jordan's most recent plot, and this plot, as the Foley attack, also was carried out from the Syrian territory, and he used a lot of means again and maximum capacity in terms of weaponry and to succeed. Unfortunately, the police had some tips on several of the commando members, and this plot failed, but it could have been effectively damaging for the population in Amman and elsewhere.
You mentioned the fact that he was set up by Al-Qaeda and had an opportunity to build a base of operations in Herat in western Afghanistan, mm-hmm. but also has staged some operations from Syria. How important as a base of activity for Zarqawi has Syria been?
Very important, and that began just after September 11, when all the Al-Qaeda members fled Afghanistan through Pakistan or through Iran, and Zarqawi fled through Iran and then Iraq, settled some time in the Kurdish part of Iraq, and then lived for about 6 months in Syria, and this is when and from that country, where he plotted several attacks on not only Jordan but also tried later in Israel and Europe even, and Syria provided him with not only harboring facilities, with money, with training camps also, with banking facilities also to transfer money to several brothers in Jordan and elsewhere. The role of Syria clearly at that time, just before the invasion of Iraq was by the U.S. coalition, was very important.
And you certainly touch on something that I think also here is important, and that is the involvement of Zarqawi and of Al-Qaeda in Iraq, in the northern regions, in the Kurdish regions, a significant amount of time before the war, before the current Iraq war, but before the invasion of Iraq by the United States.
Right, exactly. Zarqawi was running the training camp in Iraq, became close to all the Islamic group active in Kurdistan. And he took control of these groups in mid 2001, and at the end of 2001, he regrouped all these small Islamic groups under a one banner, the Ansar al-Islam group, who became military leader of this group, basically providing material, providing human resources, training to their members, and this is really important because it's for him the starting point of his international network. We knew that all these groups were raising funds and were supported by various individuals or groups inside Europe and elsewhere. And by taking control of this small territory in Kurdistan, he also took control of various support groups around the world, and especially in Europe. We'll see later that, for example, when he needed money, some of the money was coming from Germany. some of the telecommunication devices were coming from the UK or Germany also later.
At the time, in the fall of 2001, at the time that the United States launched its attacks in Afghanistan against al-Qaeda and the Taliban, Zarqawi was there in Afghanistan, correct?
Right, and he was wounded during a U.S. airstrike with various other leaders, and then he fled to through Iran at the end of 2001, the very end of 2001, was helped again at that time by other networks, including a network in Germany that provided him with false passports and other materials he needed to cross the frontier and the border and succeeded to reach Iraq and then later Syria.
To what extent, you've been talking here about the fact that at the time his path out of Afghanistan at the time that it was under attack by U.S. forces or that al-Qaeda and Taliban were, his way out of Afghanistan was through Iran. Was there any involvement of the government of Iran in this? Did the government of Iran facilitate this in any way?
Well, that I haven't seen any proof of that. What I can say is that through telephone intercepts that were carried out at the time by the German police, German intelligence, we know that during some conversations, Zarqawi stated that he was under the protection of the Iranians, which we don't know if it meant the Iranian government or a part of the government or some sort of group inside Iran at the time.
Perhaps I'll introduce again our guest for this hour of focus, Jean-Charles Broussard. He is an international expert on both terrorism and terrorism financing. Since June of 2002, he's been involved in an international inquest on behalf of families who lost family members on September 11th, who have made a complaint against those people who, one way or another, either provided material or moral assistance to al-Qaeda. He has testified before the U.S. Congress, before the United Nations Security Council. He's testified in a number of criminal proceedings involving the funding of terrorism. He's been widely interviewed, contributed to various kinds of media in CNN, New York Times, Washington Post, The Guardian, Le Monde, and he is the co-author of a recently published book, recently published here in the United States and previously published in France, that it looks at the career and the activities of Abu Musab al-Zarqawi, and it's titled Zarqawi, the New Face of Al-Qaeda, and it's published here in the United States by The Other Press, which is in New York. Questions are welcome. The number here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. We do also have a toll-free line, and that's good anywhere that you can hear us, and that is 800-222-9455. So here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455, and toll-free, 800-222-9455. We have a caller to bring into the conversation, someone listening this morning in Champaign, and they are on line one. Hello.
Hi.
Yes.
The relationship between Zarqawi and Iran seems a little outrageous, since he's a hardcore Sunni extremist. And recently, from the attacks that's been happening from his gangs and stuff like that against the Shia in Iraq, it seems really hard that he took that route to Iran. That's my first question.
Yeah, I think that's a good point, Mr. Broussard, as the caller suggested, and I know that you have some information on this in the book, is that Zarqawi has been virulently anti-Shiite, which would indeed raise this question about why it is that he would seek any comfort or have any relationship with Iran.
Right. First, his stance against the Shia is recent. I mean, he's coming after the war in Iraq. But indeed, the situation with Iran was the following. I mean, Iran was during the conflict in Afghanistan at its border again, and on the other side, it had Iraq. Iran has always sought to have its hands or to have control over the groups, the jihadi groups, active, of course, in Afghanistan. And that is why it played both the cold and warm, I may say. We know that for years it provided safe haven or passage to various terrorist leaders, including leaders of Al-Qaeda. We know, for example, for sure that when crossing the frontier, those members were, the Iranian authorities have given orders to the customs not to put any stamp on their passport, but to put a stamp on a piece of paper, so they were able to cross the borders at the time.
Doesn't that seem really outrageous? Because he's been killing the Shiite leaders right and left in one part, and that they helped him, supported him financially and all that. Well, leaving that matter at rest, and the other side of it, Syria, which is another part of the agenda from Zarqawi, considering them as infidels and consider them as a country that is against God. And also, on the other hand, he's claimed that they're helping him. That also seems really, on the other side, where he's helped by Iran and Syria, which they're on the two sides of equation that don't make sense. And another small part is that Zarqawi was never seen in Iraq or spotted by any Iraqi whatsoever. Not a video has shown about him at all through the media, where he published a lot of videos that he's always masked, where everybody knows his face or who he is. That just seems fabricated to me.
Okay. Well, regarding the first question with Iran and Syria again, should distinguish the on one side the propaganda and on the other side the facts. And the facts are there. Zarqawi went in Iran. He was able from that territory to plan attacks and to harbor several of his members of his groups of his group. And on the other side, regarding Syria, the same happened. We know for sure that he was there. I mean, people from his own network testified before courts in Jordan and elsewhere. We have traces of his presence at the time in these countries because he simply crossed. He had to cross borders, and we know from his various passports, whether fake or real, that he crossed these borders and settled for some time in Syria but also in Iran. Now, regarding the second issue, you're right. I mean, he was not directly present in Iraq. The Kurdish part of Iraq, as you probably know, was not under the full control of the government at the time. I mean, before the war between 2001 and 2002, most of the meetings, for example, for regrouping the forces, the Kurdish Islamists, for example, took place in Iran. We know where, we know who was there, and we know Zarqawi was there also because other people testified he was there. You're referring to videos. I mean, we have various videos back in the year 2000 and 2001 showing him in Kurdistan with other fighters, okay? So he was there for some time, and we know he controlled those groups for sure.
I don't want to hold the line too much. That would be my last one, and I'll hang up. It was reported by the so-called Islamist in the north of Iraq that was present prior to the collapse of Baghdad, and he was reported killed by the Kurds in the north. Places, and you see a significant change into the Kurdish movement that since that time till now, not really any attacks came from that area. You always see always happening in the middle and south, the some part of the Shiites and mostly the middle Sunni and a little bit to the Turkmens in Kirkuk. But you never see any ties, like all of a sudden that switch has flipped since that day that he was reported dead. Not a video, not a picture, not any intelligence of any significance. Everybody says there's a trace, but never mentioning what is that trace, where is it from, or any concrete evidence, because if we had anything, we would have went taken him out, and everything would be game over. Thank you very much.
All right.
Thank you.
Yeah. Do you believe that there's any evidence to suggest that in fact he might not be alive any longer?
No, because we know that the Kurdish groups, I mean, you know, there's some real, you know, there are various groups in Kurdistan. They're fighting each other, and they're making every group has its own agenda and propaganda. And we know for now months, I mean, of course, I've seen these many reports of Zarqawi being killed, being captured, being wounded, etc. I mean, and at each time it came from basically the same sources, so we can doubt simply these sources. But again, we have traces, clear traces of his presence at the beginning of the war in Iraq and later in Syria and elsewhere, and these are facts. I'm sorry, but these are facts.
Just one more point, and then I'll get on to the next caller. We talked about the fact that Zarqawi was involved in trying to organize extreme Islamist elements within Iraqi Kurdistan before the toppling of Saddam Hussein. So obviously this was part of an al-Qaeda strategy to organize and be involved in that area. The United States, prior to the Iraq War, tried to make the connection between Zarqawi and the government of Saddam Hussein. Is there any evidence to show that there was indeed anything in the way of a significant kind of contact or relationship between Zarqawi and the government of Saddam Hussein?
No, indeed. On the contrary, we mentioned in the book that members of the Zarqawi network were arrested in Baghdad prior to the war in Iraq. We also mentioned the fact that even if contacts may have existed in the past between al-Qaeda and some parts of the regime of Saddam Hussein, it was never fashioned or conceived as a real alliance, and I don't believe the Iraqi regime really sponsored or provided support to any of these groups, because it's what was not its intention. Of course, he was letting them act for example, in Kurdistan. But again, Kurdistan was out of control of the government at the time. And yes.
All right. Let's talk with another caller, someone here locally in Champaign-Urbana. This is line number two. Hello.
Hi, interesting comment on the details of some finances. For example, like the news says there's a plan to revive the gold dinar, D-I-N-A-R, as a coin to pay for oil, and that's popular in some places and not so popular. And like, is there any Mideast bank that issues its own credit cards? And if so, how would they do that to a mysterious customer who has no fixed address and so on? And in Baghdad, they found $100 million in Western currency in a trailer. And was that real currency? And maybe some of the victims have a claim on that.
Yes, yeah, of course. We know that Zarqawi and several members of his groups used these Iraqi banks over time, and this is still, if indeed, a mystery, because these people had no real address in Baghdad or elsewhere, and these banks were state for some of them. I mean, most of them were state banks at the time. But we know they move money. They managed to move money from Iraq to Syria and then Jordan for the purpose of the group. This is still unexplained, right?
Hmm. Tell us just about, and this is obviously something we could spend a lot of time talking about, the significance of the activity of Zarqawi and his network within Iraq today.
Well, today the situation is that, beginning with the offensive in Iraq, several groups, insurgency groups, were formed, and they were corresponding to each for a tribe. You know, each tribe wanted to have its own insurgency group. What makes interesting with Zarqawi is that he has been able, using violence and other communication means, and attracting, of course, the attention of the media and the public, he managed to became incarnate the chief chief of these groups, and we've seen over the past few months that several small groups of insurgents have decided to rejoin. Now the new group they formed, Al Qaeda in Iraq. Again, because he succeeded with violence to impose himself even to other groups, he decided to launch this campaign of beheadings to be the most cruel and then to appear as the most well-known terrorist and insurgent in Iraq.
Has his network been involved in terrorist activities outside of Iraq?
Yes, we know, for example, that it was the Zakhawi network that provided financial means for the Casablanca bombings. We know that the second-in-command within his network came in Madrid before the Madrid bombings to train and to give advice to several of the plotters of the Madrid bombings. We also know that several members of his group were trying to plot a chemical attacks on Europe in UK, France, and also in Chechnya.
We have another caller here. Let's talk with them. Line number one. This is in Urbana. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Sorry, I came in the middle of conversation. I heard that the guest said that Zarqawi was in Herat, Afghanistan. I want to know, if you could please answer, when was he in Herat, and where was his camp?
Can you do that, Mr. Brizard?
Yeah, sorry. Well, he arrived in Afghanistan in June 1999. The Herat training camp was settled in the beginning of year 2000 until September 11. The camp was located just nearby the Herat governorate, the headquarter of the province near the border with Iran.
Near the border with Iran?
Yes.
Yeah. Thank you.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I hope that you have other questions or.
Well, I'm just curious because what he's saying near the border with Iran, there is some little sub-district buildings for custom purposes and others, but to make a training camp there under the eyes of Iranians, and in that area in 1999 was, of course, at this time was under the Taliban.
Yeah.
So that it makes it quite difficult to operate in that area. But nevertheless, you know, I do not even prove that Taliban, of course, could not provide the logistics for Zarqawi and his friends, but the scarcity of people like Zarqawi in that area, around Islam Qala and Dikarun, in those areas, with Iranian being quite vigilant of the Taliban and others, make a training camp, in my view, very difficult to operate.
Well, any comment you want to make on that, Mr. Brizard?
Well, first, again, I mean, the training camp was located around 25 kilometers from the Iranian border. We know that also at the time the training camp was settled, the relationship between Iran and Afghanistan was eased, and the border was reopened, unless the Taliban regime was still active, of course, in that region. So, what to say? Yes, he was active there, and members of his group were able to cross the border very easily, and we know that again from interrogation of members of his network at the time.
All right. Thank you.
All right, thanks for the call. And when we talk about a base, how many people are we talking about having been there?
Well, if we're speaking about the Eritrean camp, we know that 15 different nationalities have been trained there by Zarqawi, which represents around 1,500 people.
Hmm.
Between 2000 and 2001.
So 1,500 people in and out of there over a period of about a year.
Right, exactly.
Going back to the significance of Zarqawi in not only in Iraq today, but in terms of his ability to stage operations outside of Iraq. I asked this question expecting that you will have a particular answer. Now, the Bush administration has made the argument that the war in Iraq is important, and it's an important battle in the international war against terrorism, and have said that, you, I'm sure, have heard some of the president's comments saying that it's better that we fight the terrorists there than we fight them here. And that's, so they've made that strong argument that that's why it's important for us to be there. Other people have said that, in fact, as a result of our military involvement in Iraq and the increasing presence and organization of people like Zarqawi, that in fact now Iraq has become an important base for terrorism, is a more dangerous place than it was, and is a greater threat than it was before. So that if the goal of the Bush administration was to make us safer, it's not been successful. Knowing what you know about Iraq, about Zarqawi, about Al Qaeda, which of those do you think is the correct assessment?
Well, I may say, you know, both are right. I mean, Bush was wrong before the war, but he's right today. Today, Iraq became the epicenter of Islamic terrorism in the world. And of course, this was a direct consequence, I mean, indirect consequence, sorry, of the invasion of Iraq. But the fact is still there, and this is why we all must fight these networks in Iraq, and not only the United States, but all the Western countries and all the countries in the world, I believe. I of course, as many in Europe, was opposed to the war. But today it's a fact that Iraq is today the epicenter of the Islamic terrorism and probably also the Al-Qaeda network. And Zarqawi has a major role in this picture. And this is why, again, I believe we should all fight this network where it is today in Iraq.
Mm-hmm. But not to put too fine a point on this, you would say that that Iraq would not be a locus of international terrorism to the extent that it is had not the United States invaded.
Right. Yes, correct.
We have about 10 minutes left in this part of Focus 580. Again, our guest is Jean-Charles Brissard. He is an international terrorism expert, particularly on the whole subject of financing of international terrorism. And he is the author, co-author of a book that was first published in France and now is being published in the United States that looks at the career of Abu Musab al-Zarqawi, the man who is arguably the most wanted man in Iraq today. His book is titled Zarqawi, The New Face of Al-Qaeda, and here in the United States, published by the Other Press, which is based in New York. We have a caller here. Others are welcome, and about 10 minutes left in this part of Focus. 333-9455 here in Champaign-Urbana. Toll free, 800-222-9455. We have a caller here in a nearby community of Belgium, and that is line number 4. Hello.
Good morning. In listening to your conversation over the last 45 minutes or so, I get the impression that this gentleman is a very bad person, and he doesn't seem to have any scruples about hurting anybody, whether they may be associated with him or not. And would think that after a period of time, somebody else would want to have him done in besides just the Western powers. I mean, all these people who are being killed in Iraq on almost a daily basis by these suicide bombers, which seem to be generated from his area, are killing a lot of people who are really sort of being on the same side he is, I would thought. Why aren't these people pushing harder to eliminate this risk to their lives?
I'm sorry. I lost the question.
Well, I mean, do you want to restate the question?
Well, maybe I can put it a little bit shorter.
Yeah.
He seems to be the person who is causing a lot of the problems. Admittedly, the United States government's involved with it, too. But this gentleman is directing people to kill people who are also his, could be relatives, essentially. Why don't they want to stop his activities?
Okay. Because I guess, the Zarqawi represents a minority. He's not the majority, a vast majority of Iraqi people. But his followers are believing the same as they do. They believe that everyone cooperating with the U.S. authorities is should be killed, that even Muslims cooperating with the U.S. authorities, Western authorities, should be killed. And again, it's an extremist minority, but it's still a minority, a very active minority.
But that's exactly what I'm getting at, sir. If he is such a minority and other Iraqis don't want to continue dying, why don't they help him bring this guy out of work?
Well, he's protected, obviously, where he is. I mean, where he's active, especially in the Sunni triangle, he's protected by various networks and various religious authorities or political authorities in that area and in the United States, of course, and we know that. But again, it's still a very small area in the country.
Mm. Well, I just seems to me that they would be able to put more effort themselves into their own security. Admittedly, the United States should leave. I agree 100%, and that'd solve a great deal of the problem. But maybe they should step up and say, this guy has got to go.
Well, you should also realize that for some reason and for some time, now it's starting to change. But until the elections, I mean, several have used Zarqawi and the power, I may say, of Zarqawi in the media and elsewhere to strengthen their own position. And this was the case for the Sunni Sunni population who believed at the time that the only way to succeed for them and to remain in power in their territory was to succeed in showing that the country won't be governed by a Shia majority and that the United States would fail in their attempt to impose democracy in Iraq. So basically, they also used Zarqawi for their own purpose.
So I think that's an important point to underscore that point. I think that I'm sure that there are a lot of people who would essentially agree with the caller, and you would too, that there would be a lot of people in Iraq today who would be quite happy to see Zarqawi killed and out of the way. But at the same time, in this very confused conflict, this power struggle between various groups after the collapse of the Hussein government, and still in this continuing process to build something new, there has been a big power struggle, and he's been a part of it, and he has been used by people who were interested in the kind of power that he had. Now today they might not want to have anything to do with him, but as you'd say, it's been an important force in the whole mix. Well, let's go on and talk with someone else. We have a caller here in Champaign, line number one.
Hello.
Yes.
I'm sorry. I guess I still have my radio on. I was wondering if you could address the similarities with the Algerian War as far as fear among the populace that is created by the insurgency, that you have to either be with us or against us. And also, what the U.S. didn't really reckon with, apparently, was Iraqi nationalism, the strength of it, and the fact that they would just resist an occupation by a foreign power, especially the U.S. Hello?
Yes, I'm sorry. Yes, the parallel you made with Algeria, that's right?
Right.
Well, it's quite interesting, and indeed we see today a real convergence between Zarqawi and the Algerian groups. For example, especially the DSPC, because they all were grown from the same basis as you just stated.
Can you explain what the GFPC is?
The Salafi group for the Salafi group for preaching and combat.
Okay.
Okay, it's a group which there is from former Afghan combatants, and today is the more. Probably the more dangerous, not only in Algeria, but in Europe, elsewhere. And there's today a real convergence between these two groups. We know that the GSPC praised allegiance to Zarqawi very recently. We also know that this group called for Zarqawi to kill Algerians in Iraq and elsewhere in the world. So it is very interesting to see that groups, you know, grown from the same basis are today converging.
I'm going to have to jump in. My apologies to the caller. We're almost out of time. Just as a general question, you think that Zarqawi and his network will continue to be a threat both in Iraq and outside of Iraq?
Oh, yes, that's for sure. And we know that now for several weeks there have been a lot of talks inside Al-Qaeda in Iraq and among the members of his group to basically today export in some way the Iraqi conflict in the West here or in the United States. And his will is supported also by Osama bin Laden, who publicly praised that he should strike the United States, is clearly to attack indeed Europe or the United States in the future weeks or months.
Well, I want to thank you for giving us some of your time, Mr. Broussard. We appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Our guest, Jean-Charles Broussard, he is an international expert on terrorism and terrorism financing and is the co-author of this recently published here in the United States, titled Zarqawi, The New Face of Al-Qaeda, and it's published by The Other Press, a book that was published previously in France.